Hey, John.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to John Talk Radio tonight. This is our December the 19th show of 2015. My special guest tonight is Noah Hoffeld. Noah, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. It's great to be here with you.
It's really great to have you on. We have a lot to talk about. Noah's latest release is Play Human. We just heard the song Play Human from the album, and I just highly recommend the album. It's got so many things going on. It just like gets you thinking about things, Noah, and I really appreciate that. A lot of music today, I like the intellectual and the music is just amazing. You hit a bunch of different areas that we want to talk about in music and music genre, but it doesn't look like you pay a whole lot of attention to staying within boundaries, and you're just playing the music. It seems like that's what we want to talk about in your songwriting. About you know how you describe your music and on this album, and I think it's one of those things where, you know, when I heard the album, I was really impressed, and I thought, wow, this is an amazing piece of work.
And when thanks a lot, man. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I would just like, one of the main things I would like for the listening audience tonight, Noah, to know is about you and then about your music. But I think one of the most important things that I can do is to let, you know, people know who you are, because I've been doing this show since 2008, and I think that's what, you know, I'm supposed to do. I'm just let people know who Noah is, where your music comes from, and let's start with that. Let's start at the very beginning. Let's open the book and at Genesis and tell us about your life, and tell us about, you know, how you grew up and how music became a part of your life.
Sure. Well, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and I had really a great home life in that both of my parents were really into the arts. My dad was into visual art and worked in museums when I was a kid. And my mom was more into music and literature. And that combination just opened me up to a lot of amazing artwork in all kinds of media. You know, my dad actually was really interested in medieval art. And so I got to see a lot of just really amazingly beautiful religious art from the Middle Ages when I was growing up, and to be taught about that when I was a kid. And as I grew up, he got into more modern art too, and started teaching me and my brother about that stuff too. And meanwhile, my mom was playing violin and getting us into playing instruments from the time that, you know, we were pretty young kids. And that was a, you know, an amazing gift that she gave us, just passing that on to us. She wasn't a professional musician, but she was super passionate about it and just passed that on to us and got us exposed and got us studying when we were young.
Yeah, that's so important. Talk about how important it was. You said that you grew up in Brooklyn, and how important was that? Because, you know, the more I talk to musicians and people, Noah, I think geography does have a big part in it. I'm not real sure how it works, but, I mean, you're exposed to a lot of things, and there's things in New York and in Brooklyn that you're going to be exposed to and that a lot of people aren't. And how did you look at that, and how does that affect you today with your, you know, with your music and the things that you create?
Yeah, well, that's an awesome question, John. You know, living in New York, which I still do, actually, I lived in other places for a while, and then I came back, and I live back in Brooklyn now again. But when I was a kid, you know, I was exposed to a lot of different music, for one. New York is, like they say, a melting pot. And there's every kind of music you could imagine from all over the world. There are people working at an incredibly high level in New York, playing out all the time. Like, when I was a kid, I used to go to CBGB's, you know, while it was still a big scene. And I was experiencing great hardcore you know, punk rock when I was a kid. And then my parents would take me to Lincoln Center to see something by Mozart. You know?
Wow.
So, and yeah, so that was crazy to experience all of that music going on and everything in between. You know, my brother got me really into jazz when we were in our teens, my younger brother, and he used to take me out to hear Art Blakey and Dizzy Gillespie and these people who were coming through or living in New York, and Tito Puente. I mean, all kinds of music. So that was just awesome. Plus everything that was on the radio that we all get exposed to. But the other half of it is just culturally, you know, living with all kinds of people from all over the world, from every race, creed, and color, and every level of economic strata, you know, exists in New York City, and we're all thrust together. So you either wind up sort of trying to insulate yourself and live in a little bubble, or you wind up trying to embrace everybody and try and accept everybody for who they are. And I think that's a great potential that New York teaches, is to, you know, help people get beyond their little bubble and see other people from other walks of life. And that had a big influence on me as a kid, and I hope it comes into my music some too, is like this idea that we've all got to live together and get along.
Well, it looks like, Noah, from what you've said, your parents had a lot to do with that, and having you, you know, not like be, okay, so this is a part of my life's going to be this way, but you know, you had all these different things going on. I mean, I can't even, I'm jealous of, you know, going to hear the punk bands and then the jazz, and what was it like when tell us your first experience, like when you went to one of the clubs, and what was one of the acts that you saw, whether it's jazz or rock or punk or what it was, that just kind of like opened your eyes and made you think, wow, this is an amazing world. You know, music, living in, you know, playing music today is tough, you know, being an independent musician, but there's nothing more rewarding than doing something that you love to do. It's
so
just
true.
Something. Yeah, it's so amazing. It just drives you. What was it that, if you can walk us through that, I mean, when you were young and you heard something that was just like, oh my gosh, this is unbelievable.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, going to the Blue Note in New York and hearing Dizzy Gillespie play like 5 feet away from me on a little stage, that was definitely one of the mind-blowing experiences, you know. And that spirit, like that, what Dizzy was conveying about music and the power of music to unite people, that was something that I think I absorbed really, really young from people like him who were playing in the city really regularly. It's just a very, very powerful message that gets communicated from an artist like that. And I was really lucky to experience a lot of that when I was young, you know, and it made a big impact on me.
Yeah, and that's something I want to talk about a little bit, because once that happened and you were listening to that, I mean, that's some of the best music ever. I mean, it's just, that's not
exactly.
Like I could. Yeah, it's not like you're listening to, I'm going down the corner and listening to, you know, a couple guys play country music or something. Not that there's anything wrong with that, and it could be really great.
That can be great, too.
Yeah, and you were listening to actually history. And
it's true.
That to me is what I think that it's so incredible. Now, when that was happening and you were absorbing that, were you consciously thinking, Noah, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to really try to do this. I'm going to, you know, I know you're a classically trained cellist. You put in work. I mean, it means so much, I think, when people understand how much work musicians and artists put into it. It really, it upsets me sometimes when it's like, oh, what's your real job? It's like, that is a real job. You know what I mean? It's like, it's very difficult. And you had to get that somewhere at that point, whether it was from your parents, whether it was from, you know, you're just being exposed to these amazing musicians to know that I'm going to put the work in to do that. And when did you start doing that? I mean, when was it that you said,
I realized when I was 12 that was going to be my life path. And that's sort of when I put down baseball and stuff. And I was just like, you know, I got to really focus on this because it's obvious to me the cello is going to be, you know, that's going to be the biggest thing in my life. And I have to put in the hours now, you know. And it's interesting about that kind of decision, though, is one thing as I grow up that I'm constantly remaking that decision in a new way. You know what I mean? I get exposed to another amazing musician. Like, you know, last week I played with some incredible jazz musicians, and they were so inspiring to me. And what I found was that I went home and I was shedding again with my cello, and I was thinking, I want to be like them when I grow up, you know?
Well, yeah,
and
that's
of course,
amazing.
I'm already grown up by all normal standards, but I still have that feeling.
Yep.
You know, and then I make the decision again, okay, let me take it there, you know? Let me take it to that depth. Let me try and get more of the music happening and less of my ego in the picture. Wow. How can I go deeper and let the music come out more and more in my life, you know? And that's an ongoing decision. It's interesting.
Yeah, that's some great points. One is, you know, having that hunger and having that desire to explore places that are open. And that's the coolest thing about art and music is there are no boundaries. I mean, it's an ocean.
Exactly.
You can't, yeah,
exactly.
You can't. Yeah. I love that part of it. And it can be so, like you were saying, you were 12 years old when this, you started to get this feeling that this is what I wanted to do. And I think that's so important right now, Noah, with our society and where we are as a whole in our country is to, there has to be something that gets the kids to want to create and want to do that. I think it's so important to do that. I mean, you can listen to things and you can participating is what I think is missing. I think in getting kids interested in it and that builds character and it builds confidence.
Absolutely.
With kids. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's obviously we're in a challenging place right now with arts education being stripped from the school curriculum around the country and, you know, arts budgets being cut all over the place.
Right.
It's a very tricky time because kids are not even getting a chance to be exposed to this stuff and learn that it's an option. And instead they're finding out the exposure they get is from pop radio. And this, you know, what I hear is like, you know, a lot of kids, they get asked the question, what do you want to be when you grow up? And their answer is famous.
Yep.
And they don't get a chance to learn about what the actual substance is that goes into, you know, making somebody involved with music or art or whatever it is, you know, learning how to play an instrument, learning how to paint, learning how to write creatively and all of these things that make life so much richer, you know. So, you know, it's up to us, I think, John, people like us to be ambassadors for the arts and to try and impress upon people the real urgency of bringing this back into kids' lives.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah. There's a there's a project here. I live right outside of Columbus, Ohio, Noah, and there's a project that they have in the inner city, which is called the Dick and Jane Project. And what they do, they get kids from the inner city schools, and they hook them up with a group of Columbus musicians. It can be classical musicians, it can be rock, it can be rap, hip hop. All these different musicians join this group, and what they do is these kids sign up for the program, and then they write the lyrics about what's happening in their lives, and then they sit in and they go into the studio. I don't know if you're familiar with that or you have something like that you've worked with.
No, I love the sound of that.
Well, it's one of the things I look forward to every week because they play it on one of the local stations here, and it's so amazing. These kids have these things in their lives that they may think, you know, nobody cares about or nobody is listening, and then they go in and these musicians write down what you're feeling. They take that, they go into the studio, and they have these really amazing songs, and these kids. And then these kids have this jumping off point. It's like, listen to what I did, you know? And I think I've also heard, I'm sure you know this, and maybe this would be good for the listening audience, but as far as like a lot of kids in that maybe not don't have some of the, you know, the opportunities, it's so important to be able to have that somebody care for them and to help them, you know, to get involved in something that they would never ever be involved in for whatever reason. They just wouldn't think it was cool, or you know, they wouldn't have the money to buy the instruments, which sometimes can be an issue, and just having somebody encourage them and I
Absolutely.
Agree with you, 100% Noah, on that. That's such an amazing thing. So I want to go back just a little bit. So you're 12 years old, you're something like that, you're going to hearing this great stuff with your brother, you're going to these jazz clubs. What was it like when you went into the punk clubs? So you're listening to classical music, you're listening to the stuff that your parents are exposing you to, you're listening to this unbelievable jazz. Now you're hearing stuff that, I mean, what were some of the acts that you heard, some of the punk acts? Because that's really interesting to me, because that would be such a contrast. But it's so addicting, the rawness of that music.
Yeah, totally. Well, like a concert that I really remember well from CB's was Suicidal Tendencies.
Okay.
And I just, like you say, the raw power of it is what got me addicted to it. And that fierce rebellion against the known and the power structure and everything that, you know, we take in as something that's trying to control us and limit our freedom. And that punk rock just was a giant shout out against all of that. And that was very inspiring as a kid to have that as a vehicle. You know, and that seeped into my whole musical universe and helped me to think about eventually the kind of music and message that I wanted to put out there in my own songs is, you know, hopefully to convey some of that kind of raw power that challenges the status quo, for lack of a better word, which I, you know, I think we all need. And you know, rock and roll does that in a very special way. That's why it's so important to us, you know.
What did your parents think of that when you would come home and play
they
that?
They didn't know too much. They didn't know too much what I was up to in that way. Some of that stuff I just did on my own with my friends, and I didn't really talk about it too much. Maybe I'd come home and, you know, wash up, and then we could talk about something more civilized, in quotation marks, you know.
Yeah.
Something that they could dig. I don't think they were really, my parents were into a lot of stuff, but I don't think that punk rock really scored on their score sheet.
And to me, that's also something we could probably do a couple of shows on, is how that music has always given that avenue for teenagers and young people to, like, okay, I'm going to rebel against everything there is. I'm not rebelling against one thing. I'm rebelling against everything, and this is exactly how I'm going to express myself. And I've always thought, you know, my wife and I, we've raised five kids, and all of them are different, and they're all going different directions, and they all want to have their own voice, and they all want to have their own, you know, look at me. And I've always thought it was totally and perfectly healthy for them to do that.
Absolutely.
Especially with music, because I was never told, you know, that this music was right and this music was wrong. What do you think, Noah, about, like, censorship or how music is – censorship is one thing. And then how – you talked a little bit earlier about kids getting exposed to pop music and they listen to the radio. They hear certain things. It's kind of the same way.
Yeah.
It's like they're being directed to listen to certain things. How important do you think it is for kids to be able to hear everything and anything and then have the freedom to choose what they think is okay and what they think is right? Because I'm going to just take a couple of seconds here. I talked to this one teacher, and she was an art teacher, and she's in New York somewhere, and she was talking about how they would get kids that were young kids that were kind of confused, and they would have some behavioral issues, and they would tell them, you know, go in and into the art room and just do whatever you want, write whatever you want, express yourself however you want to do it, draw whatever you want, paint whatever you want, and they would see that, and then they could work with them. Do you think that's kind of a good thing? I mean, to me,
I think that sounds like a perfect approach. You know, it's what you're making me think about is actually how essential that spirit of freedom of expression is, not just for kids, but kids need that experience so that they can bring that spirit into adulthood. And it's really important when you look around at your friends and you look around at your community, you see so many people who are locked up into lives and lifestyles that don't really make sense for them and that make them very unhappy. Whether it's, you know, a particular job or a kind of marriage that they thought was going to make them happy or a kind of car that they thought was going to make them happy. And, you know, part of the reason is that they either never had or they lost somewhere that spirit of self-expression and the sense that they could go and design a life that is just about who they are really as a person and expressing that. And we need to encourage that in our young people, because actually not only does people's happiness depend on it, but our nation depends on that so that it can grow and we can invent new things, because that spirit of self-expression and exploration is the same spirit that goes into science and invention and mathematics. Right. And it's, you know, that's a human element. It's a core human value that we need to encourage in kids and in adults. And the arts do that in a way that nothing else can, arts education, because it connects you directly to that element of self-expression and identity. You know, who am I? And what is it that I have that's special that I can share with this world? That's a value. We all need to explore that and take a look at that and then share that with the community, I believe.
My guest is Noah Hoffeld, and his latest release is Play Human. And we're going to talk about that when we come back. But Noah, let's play Prayer for the World. And if you'd like to talk about that a little bit before we play that.
Sure. Prayer for the World is mostly an instrumental track that's sort of got an electronica bass with drum programming and then layers of looped cello. And on top of that, an improvised cello melody, along with this sort of call to prayer that's coming in and out with a vocal saying, this is my prayer for the world. And that's what the song is. It's my prayer for the world.
And we'll be right back with our interview with Noah Hoffeld right after this. I want to welcome everyone back to John Talk Radio, our December the 19th, 2015 show. My special guest is Noah Hoffeld. His latest release is Play Human, and you can go on his website, noahhoffeld.com, and they can purchase the album from the website. Is that right, Noah?
That's true, and it's also on iTunes and Amazon.
Now let's talk about Play Human and what, how did it start? Where was the seed where you thought, okay, this is what I want to do, and this is the music I want to create, and this is the album I want to put together? And then how did you start working? Because there it is, you know, and like it's in a, you have a visual idea of what you want, and then you have to start working with it. You have to get the musicians, you have to get the studio, you have to get the producers, you have to do all that. How did that work, and Did you have a particular idea, Noah, of what you wanted the album to sound like, or did it kind of go just become itself as it went along?
I think, interestingly, more of the latter. It was something that evolved as it went along, and sound started to inform me of what the record had to be. It's like I produced the record myself, and I was working at home most of the time, playing most of the instruments on it, and just working on a computer, building the sounds. And, you know, I had most of the songs already written, and it was just a matter of finding sounds that would form the palette sonically for the album. And that sort of developed as I went along, and I was searching inside my arsenal of instruments, both, you know, actual instruments and software instruments, to build this sonic landscape that was interesting to me and felt like something I would want to listen to. And that was sort of my guiding light the whole time was, okay, does this sound like something I would want to listen to, you know?
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, that it's got to go. And the more something excited me and made me feel like, yeah, this is a cool piece of music, this is something that that gets me going, then I would decide, okay, that stays. But it was sort of a long, drawn-out process of searching for sounds that really excited me.
How did you come to a point where you thought, okay, this is good, I'm going to stop here and not continue to search for something? And also on this, the other part of that question, are you critical of your own work? I mean, a lot of people are to a point where they need somebody else to come in. How are you with that?
First of all, stopping was very difficult, especially when it got to the point of starting to mix things. And finally, the drummer who played on the album, Dave Burnett, who's absolute monster drummer, he was like, Noah, you gotta pass this off to somebody else to mix it. And that was like the hugest favor anybody could have done for me, was to impress that upon me. And that was a great moment. And then I you know, went on a search for a great mix engineer, and I found Mark Platy, who's mixed and produced so many great records over the years, including a lot of David Bowie's catalog.
Wow.
And I was like, dude, could you please help me? and thank God he said yes. And then, you know, I left it to him for the most part to develop the mixing, with me giving some, you know, some notes here and there.
In terms of
self-criticism, that was the other question you asked me.
Correct.
I'm very critical of myself, especially when it comes to cello playing. That's like, you know, I think it just goes part and parcel with being a classical player. It's part of the way that we're trained, is to be very self-critical. And I don't think that's a good thing necessarily, or a healthy thing, but it leads to us being very, very demanding of ourselves in terms of the quality of the music that we produce. And so I appreciate it in that regard. So I'm like, I'm never satisfied with the way that I've played. I could feel good about it, and on certain levels feel like, oh, you know, I did well tonight in the show. I'm glad that I was able to accomplish this, that, and the other thing. But then there's the other voice that's always like, but you really messed up in bar 32. You know?
That voice, so, yeah, that's always there, yeah.
Yeah, and that one can speak pretty loudly, you know. when it comes to the songwriting, I have a really high standard for myself, but I think somehow because it's outside of the classical training that I received, I'm able to be a little more forgiving with myself and to feel a little freer and a little more open in my self-expression. And, you know, John, it's great that you asked me this because I'm realizing now that's actually a part of what drives me to do it, is that it allows me that space where that inner critic speaks a little bit more softly, and yet I'm still making music. And that's a really precious space for me to have in my life.
Now, the name of the album is Play Human. Talk about that,
yeah,
and talk about the song, because it's an amazing song. And
thank you.
And what it, when you were writing it, what were your talk? Walk us through that process, Noah.
Yeah. Well, first of all, the title is all about. It comes from the chorus. Why don't we all play human for a change? Loving each other shouldn't be out of range, and caring for your brother shouldn't be strange. So why don't we all play human? It's this message of, you know, we could all do better at doing right by each other and just trying harder in life to make the world a beautiful place for the planet and for each other. And that motivated me to write the song, was having that feeling inside that I've always felt, is that, hey, we could be doing this so much better. It's not that hard. Let's just try a little harder to be good to each other. The music, interestingly enough, just started with that opening riff that happens in the bass when you play the song. And I built the lyric and the chorus all around that riff, because I noticed I hadn't been writing any songs based on riffs. They were all coming out of melodies or chord changes. And I was like, geez, you know, so much of great rock and roll is based on a riff. And why don't I try that?
Yeah.
So that's how the song got started musically.
Now, then when you went from that point, when you're putting the album together, where did it go from there? I mean, so I would just assume, no, I'm not sure, but I would assume you had quite a few songs to choose from to get into the album. How did you choose that? How did you say, okay, you come over here, you're going to make it, and you're not, and why did the ones that made it make it?
Good question. I felt like there were certain songs that just hung together in terms of the sound that I was developing, and other songs that sort of, you know, my songwriting career has been through these sort of periods where I could see, oh, in this period I was really listening to a lot of more American songwriting, like Randy Newman, Leon Russell, you know, these great American songwriters. And I was trying to imitate their style so that I could improve my songwriting. But in the end, I had to make decisions about which period of songwriting was going to fit all together and be cohesive. And that stuff, you know, obviously wouldn't fit. And other periods of my writing didn't fit. So it was all based on those kinds of stylistic questions. What's going to hold together and make for an exciting whole as an album?
Now, is there someone that when you're putting the music together and you're writing it and you're starting to think, okay, this is going to work, who do you bounce your music off of? Because I think that's really interesting, because that's a critical point. Because when you have it in your head and you're thinking, wow, that's pretty good, you know, that will work. And then you get another perspective and another way of looking at it, and it can either send it over the edge or it can send it back. How does that process work with you?
Well, it's interesting. You ask great questions, John. Like my life partner, Yana, she has an amazing ear. Even though she's not a musician, she's listened to tons of music and gone out to hear tons of bands over the years. And I really trust her. You know, if I play her something and she says, "Meh, that's not so cool," then I'm like, "Oh, drat."
Ouch.
You know, maybe it isn't so cool.
Yep.
Maybe I better reevaluate this one. And actually my best friend also is the same. He's not a musician either, but he's got a crazy ear, and he's wildly into listening to music and has been so his whole life. He's really educated about music. And I send him stuff. He's in LA, and I'll send him tracks and mixes and, "Hey, what do you think of this?" And I always get good feedback from him, along with a lot of support. You know, like, "Yeah, man, you know, you can do it. You're doing it. Go for it." You know, and that's been super important. And you sort of learn, like, who are the people that you can trust to both give you good feedback and give you support, because you need that that double whammy of, you know, you feel safe sharing your stuff with them. You know they can criticize you, and yet they're going to be supportive. And that's sort of the package that I look for when I'm seeking feedback.
Yeah, that's very interesting, and it's very important to have that circle of people around you that will give you honest feedback on it. And like you were saying, your friends and aren't that, you know, they don't play music, they don't know it that way, but that's kind of the end product. That's the kind of people that buy the music, you know. That's
exactly
the people.
Exactly.
Yeah. And
I think it's dangerous, a little dangerous, when we get into too much making music for other musicians, and it can be a bit of a trap, you know. So I think it does keep it real to keep playing your stuff for people who are just passionate about music.
Well, let's play. I think we have enough time to play one more song, and then
cool.
We'll end at the one. How about the same old song? Could you talk about that?
Awesome. Yeah. Well, that's another cello-based song, and that one is all about, you know, growing up as a boy and having music be my sanctuary. You know, it's the place where I could always go, no matter what I was experiencing in the world. I always felt like I had a safe harbor in music, listening to all kinds of music. It was always a safe, happy place for me. And that's what the song is about. And I think it's something that a lot of people can relate to, because music is like that.
Oh, yeah. That was always the way with me. That was a place mm-hmm. where no matter what was happening, you could go to that place and it would make you feel good and make you feel alive, which is really
exactly.
cool.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, this is Noah Hoffeld with Same Old Song. This is from his latest release, Play Human. And we'll be right back with the rest of the interview with Noah right after this.
I am the kid who lived with the stereo on. I'm the kid who lived life for a song. Music for me was a place where I could feel free. In it lived a boy I knew how to be. To keep me warm, give me shelter from the storm. I just keep my stereo on. And there's something real that I feel when I turn it down. Let it play on and on and on. Now I got my radio and I'm tuning in late at night. Every cell super filled with light. It's all right.
NoahHoffeld.com, and you can purchase the record there, and it's on iTunes and all the downloadable sites. Noah, it's great talking to you. Are there any projects or gigs or things coming up that you would like to talk about? I always wanted to say that, and sometimes I forget to ask that.
Thank you. Well, I'm playing around a bunch, playing my songs and playing with other groups, too. I'm going to England next week to play with the great band and to play a solo show. And I'm also doing stuff just as a cellist, which is interesting to me. I have my playing's on some soundtracks that are out there now. There's one called The Wannabe that's out now in theaters that has some of my cello playing on it.
Wow.
If you want to hear that. And, you know, just the everyday exploration of sound and what's it capable of? What does it mean? And what can it bring to our lives? That's pretty much what's in the near future for me. It's interesting to me.
When you were putting the music together for Play Human and you were putting it out and recording it and putting the tracks down, were you thinking about how it would translate live?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think a lot of the album sounds like a live album. It's got something that's live about the whole thing. And I always thought about how, you know, I could even see the stage as I was working on rough mixes and stuff. I definitely feel that with this music.
That's an interesting thing because I know that sometimes through influences of other people or producers or when you're talking about exploring with sound and there's so many things now with computers and with looping and creating sounds that a lot of times,
yeah.
You know, I know that the musicians are thinking, wow, this is incredible. Now I've got to be able to get on stage. And what do I do to get that to sound like that? Because people will hear
yeah.
the album. And they'll want to come and you know, I always think it's great when I hear musicians, you know what the basis is, but they're taking freedom, you know, and
yeah.
it's just not staying
yeah.
right with it. Was
yeah.
that something, explain your live show and how you approach that?
Well, I think, you know, the emphasis has to be all the time on just making a great live experience for the audience. It doesn't, in the end, you know, making it sound like the record is something which has got to be secondary.
Right.
the key emphasis has always got to be, you know, is this an exciting show? Does this hold the listener's attention from start to finish? Is it exciting? Is it enriching? Is it authentic? You know, and I think if it has that authenticity to it, then people are going to feel that and people are going to come away feeling like that was time well spent. And so that's what I focus on. Sometimes I'm just playing solo these days because it's you know, obviously it's a lot easier logistically and economically when I'm not with my band. And, you know, that's my emphasis is just making it really an exciting experience. It's different from the album, but I feel and hope that it holds some of the same energy and essence.
Was it difficult to get musicians, Noah, to take with you and to play live that you knew that would be able to be true to what you wanted it to sound like?
Not so much, because the guys that are around me, thank God, are so gifted that they, you know, they have so many tricks up their hats, and they're so talented that, you know, I'm relying on them a lot of the time to hit me and teach me about deeper levels of music making and say, hey, you know, Noah, if we adjusted this sound here, it would actually sound better. So I'm open to that all the time. I hope that, you know, that improves my music making too, is just what these guys are bringing to the set.
Well, Noah, it's been amazing talking to you. I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show tonight. It's been awesome. We'll have to definitely stay in touch. If you'd like to do another show down the road, that would be great.
I'd love that, man. That would be great. And I hope to meet you in Columbus.
Yeah, that would be great. If you come through here, that would be, I'll be there. That would be amazing.
Very cool. I'll definitely keep you posted about that. And likewise, if you come to New York City, please let me know.
Well, thanks a lot, Noah, and you have a great evening, and thank you everyone
too.
for listening to John Talk Radio tonight, supporting independent musicians, and everybody have a great evening. We'll talk to you later.
Bye, John.